guess what? I'm here. So of course it's that thing with the news. Not only me, I'm here. Also, Rayvana is here. Well, there's craziness going on in the control room, but Rayvana is here, hailing from Illinois. How you doing, Rayvana? It's been forever. We were just talking about how much I miss you guys. Good to see you. What's up?
I am great. I'm full of whimsy today. I all color coordinated, even my drink today. I'm really excited to be back on with you. It's going to be a fun Wednesday.
I feel like these are Easter colors. These should come around right when he is risen comes around. And does this still happen? I cannot think of this without thinking of you. Is that over? Is that something that's so old now?
No, it still happens. It still happens. Keep it current.
I have to make sure I ask the source before we go on to more of it. So good to see you. I'm glad you guys are here also as well. I think I forgot to tell you guys yesterday. Go ahead, like, subscribe. Of course, share this stream to all your friends. Tell them what we're doing over here on the Damage Report. Because yeah, I'm here right now. John's, of course, off for a bit as he handles business at home. We're gonna handle business in the political world. We know what was going on with Donald Trump in the past couple of days. Let's keep it real, the past couple of years. Past couple of lifetimes, Donald Trump appears to be a career criminal, and more things and more folks around him continue to get embroiled into his criminal enterprise. Yeah, it's beginning to look that way around his legislative and electoral politics. There's more happening, and one of his attorneys now is on TV talking about this latest indictment. There's more responses coming. It's craziness. Let's watch.
We're in a bad state right now, and this is third world stuff. It's incredibly frightening. The fact that his due process rights and an indictment went up, which Fannie had to have signed, and that went up before a grand jury voted on it, that says it all.
So we understand he's got to surrender by the 25th. The debate's on the 23rd. What's the plan?
To surrender, he will surrender. Obviously, you see that there's a bit of an ego trip happening in Georgia, where they're saying that they're going to force him to have a mugshot. The purpose of a mugshot is when you don't recognize someone, you think there's a flight risk. This man is the most famous person in the world, the leading candidate right now.
He's got a jet.
Well, he does have a jet. I heard someone point that out at the back end. But Lena Habba there, one of Trump's attorneys, is talking about the mugshot portion of this and also just him having to turn himself in. Yet again, just keep the guy. There's going to be more indictments coming anyway. But specifically with the mugshot, why do we need this? And actually, I remember it when this came about. I was like, well, I remember when his first couple of indictments came in and he was actually looking forward to a mugshot because he wanted to campaign off it, because he wanted to fundraise off it. Something must have flipped. I'm not sure if his tanning didn't come through clearly or not, but there's something different that they don't want seen on this particular mugshot. That's just a minor point. As more things happen though, what they are centering in on is how this Georgia indictment became real. But before this, in case you guys forgot, before this, there was a bit of a leaked one. And I think they called it a fictitious document that actually showed some of the things, potential charges they might bring to him, and those things actually came to fruition. And now many of Trump's folks have jumped on that to be like, ha ha, there's a problem. Let's give you details and I'll tell you why that's a problem. The office of the clerk for the Fulton County, Georgia court system admitted to accidentally posting a quote sample working document related to former President Trump's indictment hours before the grand jury completed its work. And in a Tuesday statement, the clerk's office said it was running a test of the system in anticipation of issues that arise with the entering of a potentially large indictment. Posting a quote sample working document related to the former United States President Donald Trump. So they're trying to figure this whole thing out, and apparently it was a mistake. A little bit more, because Trump's attorneys jumped on this as a hole in the case. They said this was not a simple administrative mistake. A proposed indictment should only be in the hands of the district attorney's office, yet it somehow made its way to the clerk's office and was assigned a case number and a judge before the grand jury even deliberated. This is emblematic of the pervasive and glaring constitutional violations which have plagued this case from its very inception. So Rayvana, whenever you have attorneys talking for a guy who's violated the constitution and laws and even court orders and judge orders over and over and over again, it's kind of hard for them to start talking about how this is some huge violation of the constitution. I do get it as a problem, by the way. So maybe it's some level of incompetence, but what I wonder is what kind of effect could this possibly have on the details and evidence that's being presented versus it just being maybe in the wrong hands or leaked a little bit early?
So I actually do believe that it was just an issue. You know, they were just running a test to see if the system could handle it. You know, and I don't think it'll have any implications down the road on the actual legal proceedings. But to what the Trump team is trying to do is throw everything up against the wall and see what sticks. They're, you know, of course they can't win on the merits, so they're trying to win on the process already. So they're kind of already outlining what their defense of Trump is going to be, and once. You know, trying to attack the process doesn't work. You know, they're just going to try to turn the courtroom into a circus and, you know, bang their hands on the table and start yelling. I will say, for her to go on Fox News and to say, well, first of all, I'm shocked that there's anyone who's still willing to risk their reputation by representing Donald Trump. I mean, potentially risk getting indicted themselves, as we've seen happen, going to jail, as we've seen happen with his former attorneys. So, you know, pretty risky career move and personal move for her there. But I'll say that when she was on there to say this is like a third world country, aside from the fact that that's a racist term to use, the idea that it is not right in this country for someone who violated the law to be prosecuted is absolutely absurd. In fact, it's, you know, the idea that we need to protect these political figures, these politicians from the law is actually a uniquely American thing. We don't allow them to be prosecuted. This is, you know, somewhat novel, and it's the right thing to do. I mean, it's the democratic thing to do. You should not be above the law simply because you're the president. America's gone to great lengths to ensure that our politicians are above the law. So it's great to see them actually being taken back down to the level that we are all at as civilians. They keep saying, the Trump supporters keep saying, if it can happen to him, it can happen to you. It's been able to happen to us forever. This is the first time it can happen to him, and I'm grateful that it is.
Insanity, it's what they always say. And I'm like, well, shouldn't people realize that already? Do they really think that they can do these things? It's madness. And actually, that's why, as we see what many of his co-conspirators, at least people that have also been included in this indictment, are now responding to, their eyes are wide open and trying to figure out how this whole thing went down. It's gonna start with Mark Meadows, because now they're trying to do their own legal maneuvers to keep their asses out of the hot water. Here's what Mark Meadows, former chief of staff there for Donald Trump, was trying to figure out. He's trying to move this whole thing from Fulton County case to a federal court. Details. So in a 14-page filing, Meadows argued that the charges in the indictment pertain to actions he took while he served in the Trump administration. Yeah, we know that. They requested prompt removal, citing a federal law that allows US officers to remove civil actions or criminal prosecutions in state court for alleged actions taken under color of the offices to the US District Court. Meadows also intends to file a motion to dismiss the indictment as soon as feasible, is what his lawyers wrote. The reasons why Meadows wants this whole thing moved is because moving it to federal court would result in a more favorable jury pool, of course, for defendants, and would also mean no cameras would be allowed for everyone in public to see what's being presented and how much he's sweating and releasing the steam from his collar. All those things you don't want to see, because again, this is all about a political process. So he's looking to move it in that way too. Here's these charges, though, that Mark Meadows is trying to get moved. He faces two counts in the sprawling 41-count indictment, including violation of the Georgia Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act. Yeah, that's RICO. And solicitation of violation of oath by a public officer. So if you violate your oath, which he's basically kind of saying he was doing with trying to get this one piece to have it moved, you're pointing out, yeah, I may have violated some laws, but yo, I was working for the president. Well, if the president also broke some laws, we're beginning to realize why we've always kept high political figures away from any kind of accountability, because they know they can. So you're just admitting that case. And maybe we're finding problems with our legal system. Maybe we can fix that. Who knows? Still, though, the Meadows and his pushing and trying to change this whole thing up is just more political maneuvering to try and get his ass out of the fire. But Meadows is just one of these 19 folks that are being listed in this Georgia case. And there's a couple more that are a lot more fun to talk about than him. One being Jenna Ellis, and she's having trouble with legal fees. This is what she's doing about it. Actually, not necessarily her, but there's a crowdfunding source happening for her, and she's raised a bit of cash. Let's check out this graphic here. Because Jenna Ellis, as we remember seeing her on some of those press conferences, I'm not sure if she was standing next to Giuliani at the lawn mowing place. I can't even remember the name of that place anymore. It was hilarious. I'm not sure if she was at that press conference, but now she's raised over $11,000 for her legal funds. But why? This crowdfunding campaign follows reports that Trump is refusing, this is great, he's refusing to provide her with financial assistance. That's in response to her vocal support for Ron DeSantis. Bro, we always talk about loyalty. Donald Trump preaches it. He says, my people are loyal. You have to stand up and stand for me and get under my shoe anytime I want. And anytime they continue to stand, look, we started with Alina Habba at the beginning of this whole block here. And we're just waiting for that next shoe to drop. If she accidentally mentions someone else or actually doesn't stand completely in favor of Donald Trump, she might be the next to have the rug pulled off from under her. There's more people that are coming after Jalen Ellis though. Laura Loomer is another. She tweeted this out, I believe it is, tweet one of these. She's a professional liar and Trump backstabber. Jenna Ellis was indicted last night. For the last several months, she's been attacking Trump online with Team DeSantis. She betrayed Trump. I personally think she intentionally sabotaged him because I can't fathom how anyone can be as stupid as she is and decided to support DeSantis instead by supporting someone. Again, I want you guys to try and follow the logic in this because it's all based off of making sure that you have loyalty towards this one guy who absolutely has none for you. Continuing on with Loomer. She said, she has been attacking Trump online for having his PAC pay his legal fees, even though his supporters are more than happy to donate to the cause. Jeez. Jenna has called Trump supporters grifters, and she's been retweeting other DeSantis supporters who attack Donald Trump. Now she's crying online, begging Trump supporters to donate to her legal defense fund. This woman is vile. She's a liar, and she doesn't deserve your sympathy, your prayers, your forgiveness, or your money. Loyalty matters. Does loyalty matter to this degree there, Ray?
It's so funny because what they're doing is ensuring this woman takes a plea agreement. This woman is gonna sell everybody out. I mean, this is someone who is willing to risk her life, essentially risk her freedom to defend Donald Trump and resulted in her getting this indictment. Now, if the Donald Trump's camp is refusing any assistance to her, his biggest supporters are attacking her, what reason does she not have to sell this man out? I mean, he must be the pettiest bitch to walk this earth. Like, the slightest disagreement from anybody who has laid their lives down for this man and he's just throwing them out like the trash that most of them are, let's be honest. But I mean, it's really funny to see, them kind of make their own bed here. These people have knowledge of what happened. These people have the ability to make sure that this is even more difficult for the other co-conspirators, more difficult than it would be now. So for them to, I mean, she should go to jail in my opinion, but for them to do this to her, I think it just shows how, short-sighted their thinking is.
Yeah, by the way, you mentioned her going to jail. She's facing up to 20 years as well because she's got charges that also include RICO charges down in Georgia as well. 5 to 20 years, I believe, is what they're looking at. But actually, I told you guys, we're talking about Jenna Ellis. And who was her right-hand man, or was she the right-hand man of this guy? Rudy Giuliani is also one who's trying to talk his way out of this. And more with his legal fees as well. But first, let's see what Rudy had to say about the charges.
So what do you say to Jack Smith? I mean, and again, I guess you have to be careful what you say. He still is the special investigator, the special prosecutor.
I'm kind of yours and others' future.
Go ahead.
Long ago, stop being careful, and I didn't worry. I don't worry about the Jack Smiths of this world. I have a chapter in my book called "Stand Up to Bullies." So here's what I say to Jack Smith: after the Supreme Court threw out your case, which should have been a disgrace, and you should have gone and found another profession because you don't belong in this one. This one will be your legacy, violating the right of free speech of an American citizen. Never mind whether he was president or not. It could be anybody. It could be a homeless person. You don't get to violate people's First Amendment rights, Smith.
He's talking back to Jack Smith. By the way, Eric Bowling there really tried to warn him from the beginning. He goes, I'm going to ask you this question, but remember, bro, they're going to come after you if you say more of the types of things that Donald Trump and you guys like to say. And he's like, I don't care. It's like, have at it, bro. By the way, he had a bit of a shakiness to his voice. He looks very afraid of what's going on. This is what he might be afraid of. He faces a similar charge as the rest of them, a violation of Georgia's RICO Act for allegedly taking part in that conspiracy when then President Trump and others in this bid to overturn the 2020 election results in Georgia. That charge, as I mentioned, carries a minimum 5-year sentence and a maximum of 20. And in a court filing and in court on Monday, Giuliani also said that the legal quagmires have left him effectively out of cash. Maybe that's why he's so upset. He even appears to have responded to some of the money crunch by listing for sale a 3-bedroom Manhattan apartment he owns for $6.5 million. Wow. If it can happen to me, it can happen to you. And maybe you'll have to sell your $6.5 million Manhattan apartment. Maybe you'll have to do that because, you know, everybody has those. They keep fooling these people into thinking that they're on the same level as them when he'll openly say it could be Donald Trump or it could be some homeless person. You know, those garbage people there. These are the people you're supporting. These are the people you like. These are the people that you think associate with you. Because if you walked by him on the street, he'd shove you aside and be like, please keep him away from my $6.5 million apartment. I'm about to sell this because of my legal issues. Legal issues that Donald Trump is still screwing you over on. How about those details? Giuliani's attorney fees have not been paid directly by Trump's political action committee. Trump's PAC paid more than $300,000 in May to a company handling Giuliani's archived records for evidence preservation in court cases, because that might help his ass. And that's according to federal campaign finance records and court filings. Before we get to Janine Pirro, you got thoughts on Giuliani? Because he's always fun.
I'll say that I think, you know, you pointed out the shakiness in his voice. That might have more to do with the steady buzz he maintains from the moment he wakes up till the moment he goes to sleep. You know, I don't know if he was crying. I don't even know if he's fully cognizant of what's happening to him. You know, I mean, Rudy Giuliani, having utilized these RICO laws and now being charged under them, I think is just some sweet poetic justice to, you know, or just at least it's ironic and I can enjoy that. You know, this is a man who has so far fallen from the respect that people held, deservedly or not, for him for so long. You know, he was America's mayor and now he's this bumbling idiot who has a podcast where you can hear his phone ringing in the background the entire time. You know, who is real, and it just, what I cannot fathom is why all of these people were so willing to put themselves at risk for Donald Trump. Like, and for you know, 4 years of glory, what did they get out of it? That's what I want to know. Like, what did all of these people get out of it? Just being close to the president? Were there favors involved? I don't know. Is Rudy Giuliani just a massive sycophant for Donald Trump? You know, it's and this man doesn't care about you. Like, this 100%. Man doesn't give a single crap about you. So why do it?
I think we saw a little bit when the run up to the original primary, when Trump came in 2015, and everyone was vehemently against him. All the candidates, 22 of the others, were all against him and point out exactly who he was. They weren't lying when they said he only cares about himself. He's an abhorrent liar. He's a horrible businessman. They went through all the things about him that are very true. And once he beat their asses all down to submission, suddenly they love the guy. Mm-hmm. It's all about the political fealty. But I don't get, as you mentioned, I don't get the Giuliani part. He's not running for office. In fact, he knows these laws. He was the guy, I mentioned it yesterday, he's the guy who took down the mob. That's what he was known for before he became the mayor. That's probably how he became mayor in the first place. So you don't understand how this works? When you're the one who was the head of the whole legal team that took them down with the same way, the guy acts like a mobster, Donald Trump, and you work with him. And he's pulling the rug out from under you along with any dollars you may need to defend yourself. He doesn't care. There's other people defending though. Janine Pirro was on Fox News and you were talking about a steady buzz. This is just speculation. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying. But let's see what she has to say.
The issue is not whether he wanted to overthrow it, but did he believe that he won? If he believed that he won, pursuing all these avenues are okay for him because in themselves they are not illegal. If you say, look, I need to find 11,000 votes, that's very different from saying, I need you to find me 11,000 votes somewhere.
Oh my God. The shamelessness, of it all.
He didn't ask Raffensperger for over 11,000 votes because we need one more in order to win this state in the election. He just said it openly out loud on a speakerphone and Brad Raffensperger happened to be hearing him. Who knows? I was waiting for someone to try and explain away some of these audio recordings that absolutely and obviously, I think, implicate the president in doing these types of things. But I guess that's the best that they've got. No wonder no one else is saying it, because you end up looking like that. By the way, the whole line about how he just thought the election was stolen. All he thought was that there was something wrong with the vote count. Is that all he did? Or did you not read any part of this? Or did you not even pay? You don't have to read the indictment. All you have to do is pay attention to what he's been saying and what he's been doing. Because you know that whole January 6th thing, or the whole fake electors thing, or sending folks and claiming that that people that were actually counting the votes and doing their job were doing things illegal. Saying that there's all these other names and numbers of people that were voted that didn't. All these things were done, and he did this to undermine the entire system. So apparently you don't like our system. Marjorie Taylor Greene has been pushing these same lines as well. We saw it on Fox News, and apparently she hasn't gotten off it yet. Really fast, I'll read her tweet. She says, this is exactly the wrong message for our country and the rule of law. This indictment isn't about President Trump claiming the election was stolen. If it was, Stacey Abrams and Hillary Clinton would be in jail. Because, you know, they did all the rest of that stuff. This is about a Democrat regime using every tool in their disposal to throw their leading political opponent, our party soon to be nominee, in prison for life, or even giving him the death penalty in our state. Anyway, she's talking about the future of the country is not later, it's now and all this. So death penalty now is the next step. But by the way, who's floating that? It doesn't matter, just make things up. And on top of that, I thought your party loved the death penalty. If somebody's actually guilty, why not just kill them? Or if they're not guilty and you just happen to find a way to skirt around some kind of legal issues and actually get that guy because you need to progress your legal career, kill him anyway. It happens a lot in this country, but who cares? But when it comes to President Trump, oh, if they do it to him, they can do it to you. They've already done it to us. A little bit more though, because I like how upset they are about how Hillary Clinton, which I didn't realize this was even new. I thought this was older when I saw it. Hillary Clinton was on TV and she was cackling, and they hate that part. Watch.
I don't know that anybody should be satisfied. This is a terrible moment for our country to have a former president accused of these terribly important crimes. The only satisfaction may be that the system is working, that all of the efforts by Donald Trump, his allies and his enablers to try to silence the truth, to try to undermine democracy have been brought into the light, and justice is being pursued.
Little smirk at the end is what they've noticed. Many folks on conservative media are very upset about her saying those very normal, obvious things, because she was the target of the lock her up chants forever. And nobody's talking about how Hillary Clinton is my grandmother or aunt or anything like that that I'm protecting. But when you actually see these charges pop up and things happen, maybe some accountability is due. How about get everybody that does things wrong? Can we maybe agree on that? Last thoughts here, Ray, before we take off from this break?
Yeah, I'm no fan of Hillary Clinton, let's be honest, but if anyone deserves a laugh at this moment, and just that she happened to be on MSNBC at that time, because she wasn't there to talk about the indictments. She was there to talk about something else, and the news came out while she was on MSNBC. I'm sure someone in a back room coordinated that, let's be honest. But I mean, I don't think that she would have been a fantastic president. I think we can all say beyond a shadow of a doubt that she would have been a significantly better president than Donald Trump. And if she had been president, or she probably still would be right now, and there we would not be hearing the news of these indictments every day. But you know, of course, Fox News has to be angry about something, so she's not allowed to smirk after they've been calling for her to be executed for not just the past, 8 years since she was. And not in any political office, just since she was the first lady. So silly.
That's how it all works. Let's take this first break, you guys. Yeah, we talked a long time because it's a lot of information. We'll see some of your comments. You guys get to talk now. I mean, when we get back though, we're gonna go up to Ohio. I apologize, but we will go up to Ohio. I love you guys in Ohio. I was talking trash with Schuster yesterday because he's a Michigan guy. It's the only reason why, trust. We'll talk about Ohio and a ballot initiative that they lost because they just don't know the American people. We're also gonna go down to Alabama where legislators down there also don't know the American people and apparently don't know the rule of law there either. It's just nationwide when it comes to Republican Party. We'll do that and a lot more. See you in a second. Four Seasons Total Landscaping, ravaging Wolverine says, too late. But I do like this, lawn in order. Forget it, ravaging Wolverine. I forgot to give a blue apron yesterday. Before I forget, let's go ahead and hand it just for lawn in order, because I feel like I should have thought of that. It's lovely. All right, you guys, let's move on. It's already 10:30 out here. Let's move on to Ohio here, you guys. So just last week, Ohioans rejected a bunch of Republicans. They were pushing this new power grab in the state to make sure the Constitution couldn't be amended as easily as they wanted, specifically over one particular issue. They're hoping that they would allow them to pass more abortion bans. So when early voting started, Aaron Baer, who's president of one of these anti-choice groups, he pushed for this to pass, of course, because what about, you know, the children? But he was acting like he's pretty virtuous in this whole thing when they tried these backroom deals. I'll get to that, but let's listen to what he had to say.
Today it's Ohio, tomorrow it's gonna be your state. The left has really made clear this is their agenda. You know, with a state constitution that's so easily manipulated, so easily amended, the left has recognized that their biggest advantage is the deep pockets of their funders like George Soros and the ACLU and Planned Parenthood and the unions. It's not just, you know, abortion on demand up until birth. It's also a complete abolishment of parental rights, parental consent. You know, under this constitutional amendment, a minor would be able to get an abortion without their parents' knowledge or consent. They'd even be able to get transgender medicine, sex change surgeries without their parents' knowledge or consent. I mean, really what you see this is, it's the complete Californication of Ohio in one ballot amendment. And they've made really clear, our friends at SBA Pro-Life America have tracked them and have seen, they've made it really clear that they want to put these constitutional amendments in many other states in 2024. So really, it's our responsibility in Ohio to stop them here and show the pro-life movement how to defeat these radical amendments.
You see, I get to talk trash about Ohio. They keep talking about Californication of different states. Yo, they insult us all the time, so we're even. Either way it goes, they're talking about how they want to amend this constitution to keep people from being able to change, or at least allow these ballot initiatives on that would stop people from changing the constitution, or at least so that people can fight for abortion access. Here's how that vote went though. Again, this is one of those votes that would just go under the radar under normal circumstances. No against that ballot initiative was 57%. To the 43% that were in favor of it, despite all of the talking about how scary it is and how the deep pockets of George Soros and the ACLU, is that who we mentioned? Right. Those deep pockets, those billions of dollars, sure. Anyway, here's what would have happened if this initiative had passed. This is what Republicans wanted. It would have required 60% of voters to pass a new constitutional amendment instead of a simple majority of 50% plus one. It would have also required citizens who want to place an amendment on the ballot to collect signatures from at least 5% of voters from the last gubernatorial election in all 88 counties. Previous to that, you only had to do it in 44 counties. And also, it would have eliminated a 10-day cure period that allows citizens to replace any signatures deemed faulty by the Secretary of State's office. So it's all limitations and all things to make sure that they hold and retain as much power as they can, and eliminating the rights and the voices of voters, because you know that's democracy in Republican circles somehow. Still though, they're finding out that even though they spin it these different ways and all this, that the country is not on their side when it comes to these issues. Here's more, because for decades, the majority of Americans supported some form of legalized abortion. But the Supreme Court Dobbs decision overturning Roe has shifted the political intensity on that issue. The New York Times points out that it's reshaping a once mostly silent coalition of liberal, swing, and moderate Republican voters into a political force. So they're coming out and voting against things like this. So they're really going hardcore on it. And I want a few of your thoughts first here, Ray, because I know you were seeing what that guy was saying. And also as they've tried to do this to find a new way to limit abortion access, because they find that the people just aren't on their side.
I thought it was interesting that the framing of the issue from his side was actually that no, this was explicitly about abortion rights, because a lot of the messaging ahead of that special or that midterm election, not midterm, but you know what I mean, yeah, election was not that it was specifically to stop abortion rights from passing. It was that it's going to, you know, make our constitution too flimsy. But he's saying, no, this is actually about abortion, which is funny for me because that is a massively losing issue for the Republicans. The Supreme Court is giving them everything they've ever wanted, and it's been a political nightmare for the Republican Party because it's galvanizing not just liberal voters, but you know, most people support some protections around abortion. And the more stories we hear about children getting raped, babies having to have babies, the more people it will drive to the polls. And again, it's not just Democrat voters, it's you know, people in the middle. I think the swing voter idea of the swing voter is a bit of a myth, but it's the independents who are, you know, not typical voters. And because this election was at such an odd time, this is really when you expect to only see the high propensity voters, the elderly people coming out to vote, people who are more likely to sway right wing. But instead, what you saw was a lot of people making sure they got to the polls to have their voices heard. And I will also say, we have this in Illinois. You have to reach 60%, and it makes it impossible to pass anything, and it's a nightmare. So I'm glad for not just the protections that it'll provide for abortion rights, but for so many things moving forward for the state of Ohio, that you know, that the voters will actually be able to have a say in the laws that govern them.
It seems that like issues like Roe are one of those cases where enough people have experienced or at least know someone that's in need of those types of rights, that no matter what kind of lies or narratives that they can tell, enough people have seen real life situations where they go, well, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I'm afraid too, but that what happened in my life. So you can't convince people from something they've already experienced. And so when they're trying to undercut people's rights, they're like, well, wait a second, I would like to protect my rights on that because I've experienced it. So they can't convince people the same way they can when it comes to the othering of maybe minorities or migrants, any of that type of stuff, because they're like, oh, I don't know them, I've never experienced their life, so I can totally discriminate against them. But everybody's affected by these types of things. And so the fear tactics just don't work the same way. It's why they're trying to run and find different hidden ways of doing it. But access to information, I think, is helping that. You mentioned the Supreme Court and all that. Let's jump to this next story though, because Alabama, from Ohio down to Alabama, they're also challenging the Supreme Court. But in this case, it's more about trying to limit people's access to voting. But you can probably guess which people they're trying to limit down there in Alabama. Let's go here. So Republicans down in Alabama are now ordered by a federal court to redraw their congressional maps to ensure that there are at least two majority black districts there, so that black voters can actually have a voice that means something in the state that they live in and pay taxes. And crazy how that works. They didn't do that originally. Instead, they're going to go back to the same federal court after the Supreme Court weighed in and told them what to do on this because they're gerrymandering maps in illegal ways. This time, they're trying to argue that they're trying to come up with maps that are good enough. We're close enough, right? Here's some details. Hearings over this new map kicked off in federal court in Alabama on Monday. And the state is once again arguing that it is not illegally diluting the power of black voters. This week's hearing will be crucial to determining if the fight wraps up quickly or stretches on for potentially years to come, which is actually something that they would like to see, because currently things are screwed up. Let's just muck it up in the legal system like Donald Trump tells you to do all the time, and we can keep things as is. A little bit more though, during Monday's hearing, all three of the judges on the panel questioned if Alabama was ignoring the court, the Supreme Court. Federal District Court Judge Terry F. Moore, an appointee of former President Donald Trump, pointedly asked if Alabama had chosen to deliberately disregard their instructions when drawing that new map. Now, by the way, these whole gerrymandered maps, as I mentioned, they only had one black majority district. And then in the state, we're talking about the proportions here, and in this state, there's seven districts here, and one in four residents in the state is black. So just over 25% of the numbers in the state as far as the population, but only one in seven districts get representation. This is one of those things, if you actually care about your citizens, this shouldn't be a fight that you're having at all. Republicans are arguing that the new map that they redrew effectively resets the clock for litigation. This is what they want. This is the delay part. The defendants acknowledged in a brief that the court opined that there should be two majority black voting districts or close to it. But they argue that act of the legislator redrawing the map effectively starts the process of challenging the lines over, especially because the legislator prioritized keeping specific communities of interest together in 2023, which they say was a change from the 2021 map the court previously struck down. And Governor Kay Ivey was celebrating their defiance of the Supreme Court, because who cares, right? They're not going to do anything. This is a conservative court that Donald Trump put together. This is what she said when she was high stepping. She goes, I signed SB5, the redistricting map. And this is part of her statement that she attached. Following the U.S. Supreme Court order, I called the Alabama legislator into a special session to readdress our congressional map. That sounds like maybe you're going to tell them to do the right thing. The legislator knows our state, our people, and our districts better than the federal courts or activist groups. And I'm pleased that they answered the call, remained focused, and produced new districts ahead of the court deadline. New districts that were the same bad districts before. I want to point to one part here, Ray. She says, the legislator knows our state, our people, and our districts better than the federal courts. Do you know that the people in your state are over 25% black and you've got 1 in 7 districts representing them? You know that because you said you know your people. What you maybe know about your people is that you're trying to appeal to the racist natures of your state and you're trying to ignore black folks in violation of the Voting Rights Act. Is that something else you know? So when they say these things that are all boisterous and strong and we're standing on our morals, all those things are saying your morals are racist and it's based in discriminating against folks, voters who pay. So if you're going to underrepresent these folks in your state, maybe they shouldn't pay the taxes in your state. Isn't that what that whole thing was, being overtaxed back in the day, that we like to brag about from Americans, patriots that threw some damn tea in the water because they're being overtaxed without representation? I remember that story because we like to praise it all the time. But when it comes to people you don't like, underrepresent them all you want. I'm done ranting.
It is. I think a lot of people have misconceptions about what voter suppression and disenfranchisement looks like today. I think a lot of people think about, you know, how it used to happen in our country. You know, you had KKK members stationed outside of polling places. You had polling taxes. You know, white supremacist groups would organize lynchings ahead of elections to put fear into the black residents so that they wouldn't go to the polls. But this is how, and not to say that those things sometimes don't still happen in our horrifically racist country, but this is the way that they try to do it now, by, you know, reducing the voting power of their black residents by grouping them all and giving them only one congressional district to make sure that their vote means as little as they could possibly make it mean. So when you see people like Kay Ivey celebrating this, is there really a meaningful distinction between celebrating this and celebrating, you know, the KKK standing out in front of polling places? It's the same type of racism. It's the same type of disenfranchising black voters. And this is an exceptionally horrifically racist thing. And we should all be raising an alarm on this, because you're exactly right, JR. What they're trying to do is they're trying to slow down the process as much as possible before the next election to make sure that the black voters in this state have as little say as possible as to who the next president of the United States will be and who gets to represent their interests in the federal government.
Simple questions could always be asked of folks like this. So you guys understand, state the facts. There's 1 in 7 districts that are black. Do you guys not care that black people are underrepresented? Do you want it this way? Do you not understand it? They have to answer the question. They may understand or they may say, I don't know. Well, if you don't know, then you shouldn't be representing the state. You shouldn't be ahead of this whole thing trying to understand what apparently you don't. I'm not sure what their answer would be because they never get asked these questions so directly. Maybe they don't even put themselves in a position to be asked these questions. It's probably the first point. But once the layers come off, we know what the objective has become. And they're like, well, we kind of got close, right? Because they moved one district that's majority white from 30% of the black vote when these gerrymandered from 30 to 39. That changes everything. No one's buying it. We have to take this next break, right, Ashley? Let's go ahead and take this next break, you guys. See what you guys have to say before we come back again. But then when we do, what do we have? Oh, this is like watch list special. I love this story. Cops are being hurt. Their feelings are being hurt and they're trying to gin up some charges. This specifically in Delaware, and you'll never guess what the violations are. It's fun stuff. Let's do that in a second. Delaware state troopers were caught on dash cam plotting a way to frame a man on false charges after he gave them the middle finger. The middle finger. That one in the middle that I can't do because apparently it's super offensive. The video is a part of an ongoing lawsuit between this driver, Jonathan Gesford, and 4 local state troopers. This is what happened. This is how this whole thing came down. The case dates back to March of 2022 when Gesford had been holding up a sign. This is the funny part, saying radar ahead is on the roadside in order to warn drivers of a speed trap, is what court documents were seen by the insider said. Officers Stephen Douglas and Nicholas Gallo arrived on the scene telling Gesford that he was disrupting traffic, and he denied that. Then eventually footage shows one of the officers grabbing his sign and ripping it up. Jeez. Gesford gave the officers the middle finger at that point as he drove away, is what the outlet also reported. In the process of his complaint, Videos have emerged which show the officer discussing various laws under which to pursue him, despite seeming aware that they didn't apply. So they're trying to frame this guy. Let's watch this first one.
Yo, what's up, man? What's up, what you got? He stuck his fake middle finger out of the window.
Oh, okay.
What's that? What's that?
We could lock him up for disorderly conduct. He probably won't go anywhere.
Nah, isn't it like an improper hand signal or something? Charge?
I know. No,
I mean, like, if you stick your freak, I'm telling you, if you put your arm out the road, your hand out the road, and you're like, with a middle finger, that's like a, isn't that? I'm pretty sure. You sure about that?
I see now we're going to have a problem with that guy.
Oh, yeah.
But after a while, he's going to do something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do something stupid. Mm-hmm. He got his kid in the car. And then, you know what I mean? Dog in the car. We lock him up. Kid, mm-hmm. Put his dog in the impound. Mm-hmm. You know, but he'll do something stupid. But for now, it is what it is.
So much went down there. If you guys couldn't tell completely, he was upset because the guy took off, stuck a middle finger out the window, and now they're trying to come up with charges. While they're sitting there behind him during this traffic stop, then talking about impounding his dog, taking him to jail, ruining his life for a while because of a middle finger he stuck out the window because they came and stopped and told him to stop warning folks of their speed trap. This is where this all began. And again, so as these three cops are standing on the side of the road trying to figure out ways to get this guy and destroy his life and forget the fact that his animal is also its own existence and they're just gonna throw him in the pound too and who cares what happens to it. It makes you wonder, so where's all the crime that cops talk about they're always fighting? This low morale that they never had because people are always dogging them out and saying that they're ridiculous and come after people for no reason. Our morale is low. If we had more morale and more numbers, maybe we could actually fight crime. Or maybe if you had three guys who were sitting on the side of the road harassing someone, they could go fight some crime. Maybe there's not much crime happening in that area of Delaware. Good job. Now go and chill and hang out and have a lunch or something. Anyway, Guessford had an eventual charge. He was failing to give a right-hand turn signal. That was dismissed. But later he did sue, saying that the officers had blocked his right to his freedom of expression. He can express all he wants that he doesn't like the cops and F you for ripping up my sign. He probably could have said assault for snatching my sign out of my hand. Either way it goes, in a statement to the Insider, Delaware State Police said that an officer had been disciplined after an investigation into this case. And it declined to comment further on pending litigation because there's nothing else to say because this is my speculation. They didn't do anything. Colonel Melissa A. Zebley, who's superintendent of the Delaware State Police, was also cited in the statement as saying this. Our role goes beyond enforcing the law and extends to safeguarding the rights and liberties of every person with whom we interact with. I'm committed to ensuring every member of the Delaware State Police understands that obligation and takes it seriously. What is it about getting flipped off with cops that gets so upset? You've got the gun, you got the billy club, you got the car with the ramming, you got everything at your disposal to be the intimidating figure that you are. And someone flips a finger at you and you get upset. Matter of fact, as I said, this is like it's a bit of a watch list classic because back on my show, we talked about these folks and other cops that were upset about the same middle finger. It's just nationwide, watch.
Why are you giving me the finger?
What? What's your problem?
What?
Why are you giving me the finger?
I'm walking away.
Huh?
Am I free to go?
Why are you giving me the finger?
Am I free to go?
No.
Come here. For what reason?
Why are you giving me the finger?
I'm free to go.
What's
Am I free to go?
What's your problem?
Am I free to go?
No.
What do you have a problem?
No.
You have a problem?
No.
You don't have a problem, then where? I can leave.
Why are you giving me the finger when you're walking? Huh? Come here.
I'm free to go.
No, you're not. Get over here.
What?
Get over here.
Why?
Because.
Is that a lawful order?
Yeah.
For what reason?
Because you're giving me the finger. Get over here.
What?
Get over here.
I'm not doing anything illegal.
Yeah, you are. You just cursed me off.
That's not a crime.
Yes, it is.
Says who?
Says me.
Says who?
Turn around. Come on.
Bro, that is not a crime.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Be careful, Ivana. You give me the finger. You cursed me off. You give me the finger. Give me the finger. That's all you got, bro. That was older footage, but apparently it's nationwide. Giving a cop middle finger is a problem. What's your thoughts here?
Yeah, so first I want to say it is a constitutionally protected speech. You can flip off a cop. You can swear at a cop. Totally legal, absolutely legal. One thing I'll highlight is you saw in the car that that cop couldn't even remember, you know, the statute that he was trying to arrest the guy for violating. Yeah. I just need to remind people that to be a lawyer, you have to go to 3 years of law school and then you have to pass the bar. Cops, nowhere near that level of education on the law. And they're the people who can kill you if they think that you violated it, right? So it is absolutely absurd to me. And I think it really highlights the psychology behind the cop. So many of them, you know, either pursue becoming a police officer because of it or fall into it once they're there. It is about having control. It's not about protecting anyone. It's about, you know, being able to bully civilians, being, you know, you want to see yourself as the top dog, and anyone who disrespects you, even simply flicking you off, you know, then you want to be able to use your force against them, regardless of whether or not it's legal. He really wanted to ruin this man's entire life. He sat there and fantasized about taking his child away from him because he flipped him the bird. These people are babies, babies with guns.
It's crazy. And that's and they collected. Not one of them was standing there going, I mean, there was some counsel saying, hey, maybe that's not going to work. But it's not like, what are we doing? Maybe we should just go. Bro.
Right.
Maybe we can squeeze this last one in, right? Ash, let's squeeze this one in because Maui, the fires out in Maui have other implications happening and they're pretty nefarious. And I'm not sure why this wasn't predicted before. Let's check out what Governor Green is talking about that's happening.
I've actually reached out to our Attorney General to explore options to do a moratorium on any sales of properties that have been damaged or destroyed. Moreover, I would caution people that it's going to be a very long time before any growth or housing can be built. And so you will be pretty poorly informed if you try to steal land from our people and then build here.
Stealing land out in Hawaii now, as we've seen this stuff going on in Maui. That's Governor Josh Green there of Hawaii. And he's talking about this stealing land in a bit of a roundabout way, because it does have some effect here. Governor Green said that the residents should beware of these tactics, which prey on the fear of foreclosure or the cost to rebuild. What's happening here is there's investors coming in, is offering folks that lives have been devastated and their property's been devastated by these fires, and saying, hey, I'll give you a couple $5 to $10 for your land and your burnt down property because you need it, right? And in reality, many of them aren't even really investors that would be reputable in these situations. They're just looking to take advantage of a horrible situation where people's lives are upside down. More from the same quote. These prospective buyers might also misrepresent or withhold information, enticing homeowners with an all cash offer, quick closing, cash advances, or other tactics to get the homeowner to sign without any consultation. There was one particular resident that I saw over on MSNBC, Tierra Lawrence, and she was talking about, and she's been on her Instagram page warning people of this because she is one of these residents who lives there and has a background there, and that's her history, lives there, and now it's all trying to be flipped over by many of these folks. And this is what she said at one point during that. This is me quoting her. She says, Maui is not for sale. It's important that the multi-generational families that come from Lahaina get to continue to live in our hometown. And it seems like just a whatever thing, but it's a big deal. And people find ways to jump in and try and take advantage of it by offering up money when it's these horrible situations. And we kind of go about it like, oh, well, it's Hawaii, it's just a vacation spot. There's a lot of natural and indigenous folks that live and thrive there, and this is devastating to their lives. Your thoughts on this, Ray? I know we only have a couple minutes. I want to let you speak on it.
On the show on Monday, we tried to highlight and stress the importance to the people who, you know, you want to be able to help out the affected residents of Maui. Be careful what organizations you donate to make sure that they're actually giving the money directly to the affected victims on the ground, and that the money is not being, you know, subverted to these corporations, because it's large property development corporations that are trying to buy up this land for pennies on the dollar, considering, you know, most of the homes are valued around $1 million because the land is so valuable there, and because for so long these property developers and these travel organizations want to invest and to further, you know, grow the tourism industry there for their benefit, not for the benefit of the native Hawaiian people. So be careful who you're donating to. And I'll say, if Joe Biden wants to help prevent this sort of fraud from happening, give them more than $700 one time. You might as well have just gone to Hawaii and spit in the faces of every person, because it's not even $700 per victim. It's per household. Are you joking? That is shameful. He should have been embarrassed to announce that. Do more for these people. They've lost everything.
They don't figure anyone will care or stand for them as well, because they're like, Hawaii, that's where I go vacation, right? Not anymore. We're going to go to the aftermath after this, you guys. We'll see you in a second.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.